Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
And this week we have Julie Lerman. Julie has been programming and mentoring developers for over 25 years and brings a wealth of experience and knowledge to share. Julie is a leading independent authority on Entity Framework and has been using and teaching EF since its inception. She is well known in the .NET community as a Microsoft MVP, Microsoft Regional Director, ASP Insider, and conference speaker around the world. Welcome, Julie.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Can you tell us how you got started in the industry?
I actually was a totally self-taught developer. My first job, well, I did take one basic class, programming class in college. And then my first job, when I got out of college and moved to New York, there was one computer in the whole company of 1,000 people. And within a short time of my being there, it was on my desk because I was there figuring out how to use it all the time. That is literally how I got started.
Awesome. Awesome.
What kind of computer was that?
I have absolutely no recollection. Probably something somebody built by hand from a kit. I kid you not. Like, that was before, like, going out and buying an IBM computer, even. Before you guys were alive, probably.
Awesome. So, what are you doing these days?
You know, I'm kind of all over the map. I have, you know, I work on Pluralsight videos, which means I'm spending a lot of time doing research and figuring out how things work, interacting with not just the tools, but also with people. And you see me on Twitter. So yeah, I spend a lot of time on there. I write a monthly column, and I probably do that about 9 or 10 months out of the year for MSDN magazine. And I try for that not to be all about Entity Framework all the time. And what it allows me to do, which is fun, it's, you know, I've got the broad umbrella of this being about data. It's called the data points column. And I use it as an excuse to explore things that I'm curious about, but I don't have a real reason, like, you know, a client needs it or I'm building something with it to use. So I'm, you know, if I can just get the word data into that column once, I can write about anything, even if it's like Git or, you know, JavaScript or something.
So for Microsoft, you're a regional director. What exactly does that entail?
Well, the first thing to clarify about being a Microsoft regional director is that I don't work for Microsoft, I don't have a region, and I don't direct anything. Microsoft Regional Director is a program that's been around for, gosh, I think the late 90s. I've only been an RD for two years now. And the RD program has about 150 people in it all over the world, people who are, it's not quite like an MVP, which you might be more familiar with, but it's people who are working in the industry, have a lot of experience, a lot of expertise, a lot of current expertise, and are, we interact with pretty high level people at Microsoft to bring them perspectives on things. They can bounce their ideas off of us. We can complain about things that, you know, we're having a really hard time with, and maybe we're being the canary in a coal mine. So that really helps them understand what's going on out there. So it's an interesting program.
So kind of like the MVP program, it's about community involvement.
Actually, no, it's not really about that, because, you know, I feel myself, I'm a little different than a lot of the RDs because I'm more like a super MVP. But there's a lot of people in that program who they work with, not with government agencies, or, you know, they're managing 300,000 Office 365 installments and, you know, doing big time stuff like that, or, you know, or they're a CTO of a company. So they really have a company that is pretty well Microsoft focused. So they have a lot of comprehension about how people are using the technologies and what are problems in the industry. Some of them are, you know, industry experts. You know, there's a really interesting variety.
Is it a, I don't know if I'm using the word title correctly, but is it a title that Microsoft awards you, or is it one that you ask Microsoft for? Like, is it something you apply for, or?
Well, you have to be nominated. And remember, there's 150, right? So it's not a lot of people. You have to be nominated by either another RD or a CPM, like your MVP lead, right? Because the MVP leads also are in charge of the RDs in their area. And then you're very, very carefully vetted. As a matter of fact, in order to nominate somebody, you need, as you know, as the person responsible for nominating an RD, you have to pre-vet them very well. I mean, they have to be people who are not even just Microsoft focus, like, you know, somebody who not only is an expert in Azure, but understands how it relates to AWS or Google Cloud. People are speaking at major conferences that have, you know, that kind of respect in the industry. And then once that happens, then, you know, the people in charge of the RD program go through a very intensive vetting of each candidate. And it's evolved over time, and now it's really a 2-year program. So my 2 years was up, and I had to fill out the whole huge nomination form all over again from scratch.
That is quite a stringent process.
It is, because, you know, RDs are visible to a very high level of people at Microsoft, and, you know, it needs to be well vetted that these are the right people to be trusting and working with, you know, that we're not going to break NDA, or, I mean, it's not just that. It's a very rare MVP that breaks NDA anyway. Hmm. But, you know, things like that. There's actually a website now, rd.microsoft.com, that explains it and has, you know, a list of all the different RDs and what their expertise is.
Well, so seeing as you're an industry expert in Entity Framework and you've been teaching it since its inception, can you talk to us a little bit about how you got started in Entity Framework and kind of what sparked your interest there?
Sure. I'll start by sparking interest. I was already pretty involved in data, you know, and with ADO.net. And I've always been a person who liked data, but I'm not like a DBA or anything like that. Although I think opening up SQL Server Management Studio to look for data is really a lot of fun. I really like that. But yeah, no, not a DBA. I'm more of a select star person, if you know what I mean. But I, you know, so data access on the programming end, though, that was always something that seemed to interest me. So I was getting more and more involved with ADO.net and interacting with the team. I was an MVP. And had written some articles, like for MSDN magazine, right? So I was starting to get a reputation as being an expert in the data access, Microsoft's data access. And when they were working on Entity Framework actually started at Microsoft Research and then got brought to the ADO.net team, which was under the umbrella of SQL Server. At a tech ed in 2006, I was invited to a meeting with just a small group of people where the people from the ADO.net team were showing us what they were working on. So I was curious. I'd never used an ORM before, which is funny because people thought, you know, maybe that was my expertise or something. And so that concept of an ORM, you know, it was new to me. And I was like, oh, this is cool. I was curious. And I started playing with it and exploring it. And what was interesting was there was really no information on it anywhere, right? It's not like today where we have docs.microsoft.com, which were so awesome, or you know, even in the last 5 years where the teams and everybody's, you know, there's been so much more transparency and GitHub and everything. It was in, you know, beta for a while, right? It was released as part of .NET 3.5. So the other thing that was happening was this was not Microsoft's first time around trying to do an ORM. The other two had not been released. So everybody was like, they're never going to release it. And I'm like, oh, but it's curious. It's fun, right? And the other thing was everything I was doing, whether like blogging or whatever, writing articles, I felt like it was all my unique research. That was what was extra, like a big draw for me. It was very clear I hadn't just gone and read something somebody else wrote and regurgitated it. I'd figured it out all by myself. So, you know, what ended up happening was, surprise, surprise, they released it. And I was the only one who knew anything about it. And and on top of that, each person on the team that had been working on it, they had been working on kind of narrow areas and then add that all together. And I was the only person who kind of knew things across the board. So I had was suddenly like the world expert on Entity Framework. Like, oh, okay.
I started using Entity Framework around version 4, I believe. Struggled with that from time to time and worked around some of its oddities. But really started to enjoy Entity Framework around version 6.
Yeah, yeah.
I know with the, I'll say recent, but in the last few years, the recent release of .NET Core and with it EF Core 1 and subsequent releases, early on in that release, there was a lot of discussion about whether or not companies should move from EF 6 to EF Core. Can you speak to that?
So there's actually two questions. Should we migrate from EF6 to EF Core is one of the questions. The other question is, we're starting a new project. Which should we use? So I'll start with the latter question is, which is, which should we use? And my advice that I've given to people is look very carefully at what is and is not in EF Core and what's coming soon, you know, something around the corner. That should be really strong in informing you about if EF Core is something you want to use. Even if you're using just plain .NET Framework, you have no intention of ever using .NET Core, that doesn't matter. EF Core is still that same data access layer. One thing, I like a quote from Rowan Miller, who was the PM on EF Core for years and years. He's now moved to a different position at Microsoft. But he said, you know, EF6 is battle-tested. And that was really more compared to EF Core 1, but EF Core 2 is really solid now. There are still some things in it that some people are like, I have to have it, and I don't want to wait anymore, maybe it's coming. But then there's other things that aren't in there, like designer support built in, although there are third-party designers you could use. As to migrating, that's a different animal. First of all, I wouldn't migrate code unless you have a real reason to, not just because it's there, because it's work, right? It's not just an upgrade. You probably know that. There's a lot of code that will come over and keep working, but there are behaviors that have changed. There's things that aren't there. There are new things you should be taking advantage of. My advice to people who are really considering it is, look at pieces of your application that you're working with a lot, right? And it's painful. And there's stuff in EF Core that would make it so much easier, like the batch inserts or whatever. You know, it has to be worth it, right? And if it's solving a maintenance problem also, say you've got like 70% of your application, 70% of that Entity Framework related code in your application is stuff that you never touch, I just leave that alone, right? And you can use separation of concerns, right, to break things into smaller parts and take the part that needs an upgrade, maybe, and upgrade that.
Currently, I'm working on a greenfield project, so I'm getting to use all the latest and greatest bits, and I'm really enjoying EF Core 2.
Oh, cool.
What are the large differences or the big missing features currently, or what can we look forward to in the near future?
Well, we're on the cusp of EF Core 2.1, which is bringing some more, I think, in separation of concerns. So let me couch it this way. I think there's two sets of features. There are the things we're used to using from EF6 that aren't in EF Core yet that we're waiting for, right? We, not me. I think everything I need is in there already from EF6. But there's also things you always wanted to do that you could never do in EF6 that are either in EF Core or coming to EF Core. One of the things that people have been, a set of people have been screaming about a lot that was a big deal, you know, important in EF6, it's important to them, which is lazy loading, right? Lazy loading is coming in EF Core 2.1. Woohoo! You may know I'm not a huge fan of it, except it's good for my business. This is not at all to discount anybody who's using it. The reason I worry about that particular feature is because there's a lot of people who use it without understanding how it works, and they create a lot of performance problems. In, you know, situations like, say, a website where you've got a grid that you're paging on, or not even, forget the paging, you've got a grid, and one of those columns in the grid is being lazy loaded. That means for every row in the grid, you're getting an extra trip to the database. That's usually the one I get calls on. Like, why is it taking so long? Why is it making 47 or, you know, 51 trips to the database to display this?
I've done that one before.
How did you figure it out?
Well, we looked at SQL Profiler and saw that it was
good answer. Good answer. I always tell people profile, profile, profile. That's the most important. I think one of the most important tools you can use when you're doing data access.
Another most often mentioned feature that seems to be missing currently is like group by. Is that another one that's on its way to us, or?
It wasn't that it wasn't there. It was that it wasn't performing well at all. So it was evaluated in memory, but now they're creating better SQL for it. So, you know, my focus, I do a lot of domain-driven design thinking and how I architect. So those are the features that I usually focus on the most, like the features that are going to allow me to design aggregates and design my software the way I want to. And then if I'm lucky, it's an easy mapping for Entity Framework to make, or an easy tweak in configurations that I don't have to also have a data model. I can just let Entity Framework create that for me.
You and Steve Smith had a Pluralsight video on domain-driven design as well. Is that correct?
Yeah. We're both very proud of that course.
So how does that fit in with Entity Framework? I saw that there was a Twitter conversation between one of my former coworkers and yourself and Steve. So wanted to know how that resolves itself. How do you mix DDD and Entity Framework? Is there anything to keep in mind when you're practicing that?
Yeah. The thing I always want to start with is that, you know, with domain-driven design, the whole point is you're focusing on your domain and not your data persistence, right? So people say, why do you talk about Entity Framework together with domain-driven design? So in a kind of a perfect world, the way you would create things is you'd create your domain model and, you know, create all your logic around that. And then adding in the data persistence is a completely separate thing. It has nothing to do with it. And then so you shouldn't be worrying about those things. And the way you would create the data persistence is you would create a completely different model that represents your data structure, right? And persist that, and then have some way of mapping between your data model and your domain model. There's a lot of cases where Entity Framework can just comprehend your domain model and understand how to get it to the database. If you think about what Entity Framework and Entity Framework Core bring to the table, EF Core is the mapping between your domain model and your data model. So EF Core and EF at runtime generates an in-memory data model representation of what it understands the model to be and knows how to map from the domain model to that. And that's how it gets to the database. So the in-memory representation is kind of a reflection of the database schema, right? And the mappings are how to get from your domain classes to that in-memory representation. So EF Core is the mapper. You've got a data model and you've got a domain model, and EF Core is mapping in between them. There's a lot of times where that just works, whether by convention or by using some of Entity Framework's mappings that you can configure in the with a Fluent API, right? There's sometimes when it just doesn't work. Like there's something special you need to do, and the golden rule is you do not want to go back to your domain classes and tweak them just to satisfy Entity Framework's ability to map them. And that's, you know, there's a point at which you're going to be better off just creating a data model that really maps to the database easily, and then have your own way of mapping between your data model and your domain. So that's why it's a big topic for me, because what I'm doing is constantly looking at how does EF and now EF Core support that right through mapping? How does it do it for us when you have an aggregate, nicely designed domain model? How well is Entity Framework persisting that without me having to do anything extra? And that story's changing, constantly changing. And with EF Core, it's gotten, especially EF Core 2, it's gotten better and better. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've been trying to get that concept across to people, that don't go design the database and then force that upon the rest of your application.
That's how I used to work. That is how I used to work back in the old days. I was always, it was about the data storage, that schema of the database, you know. And I've joked just as an exaggeration now. I'm like, all right, well, why write an application? Just give your users SQL Server Management Studio. You're done. So that's really, really exaggerated, right? But shifting to this focus, which I've been doing, I would say over the last 8 years, shifting over to DDD, it's been life-changing for me, right? Really just totally changing the way I see how to approach designing software. It's completely changed it. And an interesting thing that I've experienced now with some of the coaching gigs that I've done with clients, with companies, is I go in and there are a lot of people there who think the same way that I had been thinking and approaching software design for so many years. It's a nice thing because I get where they come from, right? They trust me when I'm saying this. It's really made a big difference for me.
You've mentioned the Microsoft docs for information about Entity Framework and Entity Framework Core. Are there any other resources that people could go to that you might recommend that cover EF and EF Core, and possibly what you were talking about with DDD in relation to EF Core?
Sure. Well, because I've spent a lot of time on it, I can start with resources that I've created. I've written a whole lot of MSDN magazine articles, my data points column, on that focus, like, you know, the DDD and Entity Framework. One of my Pluralsight courses is called Entity Framework in the Enterprise, and I really dive into a lot of DDD stuff there. However, that's EF6. So some of the concepts are the same. But with EF Core, especially with EF Core 2, I recently did a two-part article for MSDN Magazine on that combination. This is not accessible to anybody. It wasn't recorded or anything, but I just did at a DDD conference in Amsterdam at the beginning of January. I did a 2-hour workshop on EF Core 2 and the DDD and the mappings, right? How that works. And it was a hands-on lab. I was so happy with that workshop. It was only 2 hours, and I'm going to create a full day from it and start doing that at conferences. So that's what's first in my mind, of course, because it's been a big focus of mine. I know that just backing up to EF Core, straight EF Core, in addition to the docs, some of the guys on the team have their own personal blogs that they write, like Arthur Vickers. His is blog.oneunicorn.com, Arthur Vickers. Every once in a while, he gets into a period where he's writing a whole bunch of blog posts, and they're really, he's on the team. He's brilliant. And so they're really, really interesting. There is an EF Core book coming out from Manning Press. I talked to somebody who was one of the tech reviewers on the book, and he said it's one of the best books he's tech reviewed for Manning Press. So, and I was happy. He thought it was going to be like offended. You know, I'm the one who's chosen not to write another book, right? He wasn't saying it was the best book ever written on any framework. but I was really happy to hear that, because I only want people to write great books about Entity Framework. I am very frustrated when every once in a while there's a not good content coming out and, you know, misleading or, you know, whatever. So, and the author of that is John Smith, I believe. So that's something to look forward to. And my Pluralsight courses. Oh my God. I've got one out, getting started on EF Core 2. I'm now working on a series of short courses that are more intermediate level, just getting it, digging deeper into different topics. But instead of doing a big one that's going to take me a long time, I'm just doing a whole bunch of them so I can get them out more quickly. And they'll be like hour and a half long, so people can really just, you know, watch the whole thing and wait for the next one.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Do you have any advice for folks that are just getting started in the industry?
Yes. Have big eyes and big ears. You know, I happen to have an expertise on things, and I also have free time. I have to admit, you know, I don't have any kids, right? So like my free time when I'm not out playing, you know, so this is what I do for fun also. But I know there's things you'll need to learn for the work you're doing, your 9-to-5 job. But gosh, when you see something that piques your interest, chase it down, right? You don't have to be an expert in it, but just go explore with it, play with it a little bit, you know, and then let it go if, you know, something else, another squirrel comes along. But don't be afraid to do that. That's what I do. And so after, you know, 30 years of programming, that's what keeps it fun for me.
Awesome. Awesome.
Okay, Julie, do you have any upcoming speaking engagements or any events that you've got coming up in your calendar?
Yeah. My calendar is like full for 2018. I can't add anything else in. I'm going to be next month, April. I don't know when you're going to release this. I'm going to be at the International JavaScript Conference, which is co-located with the API conference in London. And I'm giving a keynote to both conferences on something that I actually just was talking to you about, which was keeping your skills up and keeping it fresh and having fun with that. So that's that in May. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be on a trip for 15 days. I'm going to be giving 7 talks in 3 different cities at 5 different events.
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah. So I'm going to be at a user group in Glasgow, Scotland on May 16th. I'm going to be at a user group in Edinburgh, Scotland on May 21st. I'm going to be at Techorama in Antwerp, Belgium. It's a really great conference if you're in Europe to get there. And that's a few days, 22nd, 23rd. Then I'm going to be speaking at a user group in Lucerne, Switzerland on the 28th of May, and then at a full-day .NET conference in Zurich, Switzerland on the 29th. And that one, I'm going to be giving that same keynote that I was just talking about keeping your skills fresh and doing a session on EF, of course. And there's more months and, you know, more hopes of places I'll be going. So, but that's what I've got coming up.
That is very busy. If somebody had any questions or anything like that, how could they get a hold of you or follow you on social networks?
Well, John knows one place I can be found, right, which is Twitter. And I'm just Julie Lerman on Twitter. And I have managed to get my name, just Julie Lerman with no spaces or dots or dashes in it, on Twitter, on GitHub. And on About Me, And I'm not on LinkedIn. Somehow I've managed. I got enough connections. I can't make any more. Not on LinkedIn. And, Facebook these days I just use for seeing what's going on with my college and high school friends, kids, and dogs. Oh, and my dog has a Twitter account.
Oh, well, what's
your dog's Twitter? Do you know that, John?
Yeah.
Giant puppy.
Yeah, I was expecting to see Giant Puppy filling up the back of
your room. Oh, I know. I think he's upstairs. I'm going to hear him gong, gong. And, I'll add another thing. One wonderful thing about the fact that I'm so fortunate to be able to do all this traveling and speak at these conferences is that I even go to the MVP Summit. We met at a few years ago, and I was just at last couple of weeks ago in Seattle, is meeting in person people that I know from Twitter, right? Or, or even like from GitHub. One of those people is arriving here tonight. I get picking her up at the airport at 10:30. We'd known each other on Twitter, met at a conference in Portland a few years ago, hung out at a conference in Colombia and went coffee picking this fall. And now she's on a little tour and she's coming here. So that's a really, really nice thing about interacting, especially on Twitter, with our peers.
Well, thank you so much, Julie.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, be sure to like, rate, and review.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at @SixFigureDev.
That was Julie Lerman. Julie has been programming and mentoring developers for over 25 years and brings a wealth of experience and knowledge to share. Julie is a leading independent authority on Entity Framework and has been using and teaching EF since its inception. This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.